Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 2nd of April. Tomorrow, of course, the primary in the state of Wisconsin. We'll talk about it with a reporter who's been all over the state. Craig Gilbert will join us momentarily, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. First, though, because the last time we spoke, it was our spring membership drive, we do want to give a heartfelt thanks to all of you who pledged. More than 7,000 listeners pledged, and we're very happy to welcome 1,500 listeners as new members to Wisconsin Public Radio. You donated, you always want to know the money, $780,000 to fund Wisconsin Public Radio. And you gave, I think this is terrific, more than 46,000 meals to area food banks. A job well done. Thank you so much. It keeps us going. Well, tomorrow's the big primary. Everybody nationally is saying if Mitt Romney wins this state, it really may seal the deal for him. Craig Gilbert has been all over the state. Today's article looks at, and I thought the title of the article was interesting, as usual, Waukesha County will hold the key. Milwaukee's suburban counties are the heart of the GOP electorate. He writes, when Rick Santorum, while he would love to parlay his rural appeal into an upset victory in Tuesday's Wisconsin primary, the path to victory in GOP races here usually runs through the state's vote-rich southeast corner, which boasts some of the most Republican suburbs of any swing state in America. Craig is our guest this hour. We're Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We will be welcoming phone calls, as we always do. Our phone number, if you intend to vote tomorrow, what are you thinking? Are you undecided? Have you made up your mind? Do you think this is a deal breaker for Mitt Romney? Also, in the last couple days, Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett has entered the Democratic primary for the recall race against Governor Scott Walker. We will talk about that some. And here is our phone number for you to can join this all things political discussion. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Hi, Craig.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good.
I'll bet you're a little tired, sir. It's only just begun, sort of.
It's all adrenaline now.
I'll bet it's all adrenaline. Where have you been? All over the state?
I've been not all over the state. In fact, the candidates haven't been all over the state. Rick Santorum has, you know, been out west. He's been in central Wisconsin. Most of the activity has really been in the Milwaukee and Green Bay media markets. I've seen more of Romney than I've seen of Santorum. I've been here since Monday. It's, you know, most of the Republican vote is really first in the Milwaukee media market and then in the Green Bay media market. It's pretty concentrated.
There are a lot of ads in the Milwaukee media market, aren't there? I have seen so many ads, and they're all Romney ads.
Yeah, he has a big edge. Santorum has a new ad up. It's very hard-hitting against Romney. I don't know how much money there is behind it, but he likens Romney to Barack Obama in a very pointed way in terms of his policies. But he, you know, one of the things Santorum is fighting here is that financial disadvantage. You see it on TV. You also see it in things like robocalls, which everybody's getting deluged with. Not a, you know, there's not a big ground game going on in this primary, but there's a lot of people being through a lot of things and messages being thrown at voters in a short period of time.
I don't know why they do all those robocalls. We've been getting tons of them as well. And after a while, they're a little irritating, aren't they?
I think they irritate everybody. I mean, they probably wouldn't do them if their research showed that they had a negative effect.
Right.
But it is a little curious. And sometimes, you know, the messages are a little dissonant in the robocalls. I mean, the Romney, there are some Romney robocalls that have audio of Rick Santorum attacking Mitt Romney, and there's other Romney robocalls that have audio of Rick Santorum praising Mitt Romney. So apparently part of the point is to raise questions about Rick Santorum's consistency, but I don't know what voters make of that when they get these calls if they aren't hanging up when they hear them in the first place.
And why has Romney not traveled the state extensively, Craig?
Well, he came here later than Rick Santorum. I think he felt like he could afford to after the numbers in the state began to turn around in his favor. But he did stake Rick Santorum to almost a week head start, and so he's had less time to campaign. He's always, this has been the style of his campaign. It hasn't been a super you know, retail campaign because he's been the front runner. And so whereas Rick Santorum has been, I think, in more than 20 different counties by the end of today, Romney will have been in only five or six, in five counties, I believe. And they're basically, you know, Milwaukee Green Bay and Madison media markets, and mostly the Milwaukee media market.
And where has Santorum played well?
Well, I think Santorum has shown that he does better with rural voters, and he has clearly spent more time on a personal level courting the rural vote. And most of the polling, the exit polls have certainly shown that in other states, and even there's a new poll out today by Public Policy Polling, which has a 6 or 7 point race, and Romney is doing better again with rural voters. That's a significant factor in Wisconsin. It was about 40% of the vote 4 years ago in the Republican presidential primary. It was about 40% of this poll that was out today. So it's significant if he can do well with rural voters. But right now what's happening is that, Romney is staying competitive with voters across the board, and he's really overcoming Santorum's past advantage among the hardcore, most conservative voters, evangelical voters, and Tea Party voters, and that's why you see him up in the polls in Wisconsin. Mm.
I just want to know where he had breakfast yesterday, because he didn't have a chance to eat very much of it, and it looked really good.
Yeah, that was in Wauwatosa.
Was it? Oh, yes, that's right. It was in Tulsa. It looked really delicious. Really delicious. So it's getting a lot of, as you know, national press, and so many analysts are saying this could be the moment for Romney tomorrow in Wisconsin. Would you agree?
Well, it's potentially the moment for Romney to really, quote, seal the deal. I mean, in terms of the national media, if Romney wins Wisconsin, as most people expect him to do now, although, again, you know, his lead has been consistent, but it hasn't been huge. If he does that, then I think the Santorum's going to have a lot of trouble, getting the media to pay attention to his prospects as a potential nominee. And so people will be pivoting in the media to the general election. And that's pretty fatal in primary season, and it's 3 weeks before the next set of primaries, and the only one of those that he really has a shot at is his home state of Pennsylvania, and obviously losing that would be extremely damaging. That's where we're at. I mean, Wisconsin, I think demographically is a level playing field and has some good things for Santorum, but I think he's up against the timing of the race, the kind of end stage feel of the race right now.
Right. I was interested in reading the Journal Sentinel yesterday. I didn't realize this was a fairly historic year, that Wisconsin's first presidential primary was held 100 years ago today.
Yeah, and I was sort of vaguely aware of that, and it is interesting. We've had a lot of primaries. I went back and looked at the history of some of those primaries, and I'm going to write a little bit of that either today or tomorrow. There hasn't been as much interesting history on the Republican side, at least in the last half century, as there has been on the Democratic side. That's just because of the way that these races have played out. The Republican nominating fight traditionally has been shorter and less suspenseful than the Democratic fight. So in many cases, it was kind of a foregone conclusion by the time Wisconsin rolled around. So you have to go back to 1980 to find a really closely contested Republican primary in Wisconsin, and that was when Reagan edged out George H.W. Bush and John Anderson. And in 76, when Reagan and Ford kind of duked it out. But this is a Republican primary that has been won in the past by General Douglas MacArthur and Harold Stassen.
Oh, my.
And then a lot of familiar people that went on to become presidents, but not the kind of lore that the Wisconsin primary has had on the Democratic side, where at times it's been fairly pivotal. At other times in more modern history, it's just been sort of the punctuation point on the race, and it could be again this time on the Republican side.
Your article front page today says, as usual, Waukesha County holds the key, so we should pay special attention to election results coming in from Waukesha tomorrow night.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that absolutely, with an absolute certainty, the winner of Waukesha will win the statewide primary. It doesn't always happen, but it does mean that that's where Mitt Romney certainly has to do well, given Rick Santorum's strength in rural areas. And it does mean that because of the population density in southeastern Wisconsin, and also because of the high turnout rates in these places like Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington, that you know, even if he loses a lot of rural counties, a candidate like Romney can easily overcome that by running up the score in these suburban counties. So Rick's, it's very important for Rick Santorum to stay close in places like Waukesha if he wants to win the Wisconsin primary.
We will welcome phone calls, and we'll do that in just a moment. Craig Gilbert is our guest. It's the day before the big Wisconsin primary, so we're wondering what your thoughts are about all of this. And we have lines open right now. It's a good time to call. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett entered the Democratic field to run against Scott Walker in the recall. What do you think of that?
Well, a big event. I mean, another case of the local news overshadowing the presidential race. This is the main event in Wisconsin, and now we not only have a big event on June 5th, but a big event on May 8th when there's a Democratic primary. I mean, the thing about this race is, A, you know, people are wondering how aggressive and potentially nasty it could be, a potentially divisive primary between Barrett and Falk, and with some of the unions, you know, very vocally backing Falk. But also, it's going to be over in a blink. I mean, these campaigns are so. I mean, he's a guy who's declaring for a race that's a month away. And, you know, that's
what a surprise.
Kind of unusual.
Right.
Even though it wasn't a shock that he entered the race, he's got another campaign for mayor going on, and people honestly couldn't say with certainty that he would be a candidate. And so it's going to be very compressed, and it ought to be competitive, given everything we know. Both candidates bring assets to that. But like a lot of things about Wisconsin politics, sort of uncharted territory in terms of a special election, a special primary election. It's occurring in May. It's the whole recall circumstance is kind of freakish to begin with. So there'll be a lot to chew on, and it'll be fascinating to follow over the next several weeks.
Yeah. In a way, it's kind of nice that it's short, isn't it, instead of another long, drawn-out thing.
Yeah, I mean, the good news for Wisconsin voters is that these campaigns are short, and the good or bad news, depending on your point of view, is that we have a lot of them. And it's gonna
we sure have.
They're going to keep coming. It's never going to end.
Let's welcome phone calls, 800-486-8655. We'll start with Scott in New Glarus. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. I would like to urge all Obama supporters listening to get out tomorrow and vote for Santorum in the primary.
Why?
Oh, I think it's good for the Democrats to keep this Republican clown show going as long as possible.
You imagine
this Republican what? I'm sorry?
To keep the clown show going as long as possible.
Well, it will be interesting to see whether that happens. I mean, it tends to be very marginal when you get that kind of strategic or mischief vote in the other party's primary. On the other hand, we've talked about how different the environment is with social media. You could see, you know, more of a concerted effort to make something like that happen. And also the Democrats have nothing to come out for because there's no action on the Democratic side, really, in terms of the presidential race. So people will, you know, there was a little bit of that in Michigan, which is also an open primary. You don't want to overstate it, but if it helps anyone, it'll help Rick Santorum.
Thanks, Scott. Jim in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. It strikes me that no matter who you vote, who they would vote for in the Republican primary, they're dealing with people who have the same basic philosophy, and the philosophy is that government is best operated when it's deregulated and unstructured. And I just wanted to draw a parallel of how that plays out in the Stand Your Ground law incident in Florida, because what do we know in this situation? We know that. People working in police work in the past have had to consistent problems with stress, which lead to problems with divorce and suicide and things of that nature, and also substance abuse. So when somebody is selected to be a police officer, it has to be a person who has himself pretty well together, at least at the start, because of the inherent stress in the job. And we also know that this individual, Zimmerman, had some documentation of anger problems in the past, and that he disregarded the recommendation that was made by the dispatcher to not involve himself in the situation. And if you Google on the net and you look under Neighborhood Watch and the rules, you find that it's already been documented in terms of National Neighborhood Watch and also the Orlando Region Neighborhood Watch that you're not supposed to, you're supposed to observe and report to the police, but you're not supposed to be armed with a weapon and intervene yourself. And I even checked from a person I know that a Milwaukee police officer teaches the same thing in the program that she teaches in a very high crime area in Milwaukee. So consistently, they suggest that people should not intervene. And yet here's a situation where this man intervened. And if you look at it across the board in many areas of regulation, whether it be the environment or financial affairs, the Republicans have a long track record of supporting deregulated and unstructured laws. And this case that we're currently looking at is another illustration that when it gets down to the real deal, it just doesn't work.
Craig.
Well, I'm not sure what I can add to that. I haven't really been writing about the situation in Florida because of the I don't cover that. I'm not sure I would really want to touch on that. I mean, obviously, the broader point, there is a, you know, maybe more so this time around than typical election years. You do have people in both parties trying to cast the contrast and the choice in the starkest terms. And so, I think both sides would agree that they're going to be putting before the American electorate a pretty clear contrast in terms of governing philosophy.
And there seems to be a racial divide playing out here in some way. Does that become a campaign issue, or would both parties rather steer away from it?
I think not a really front and center campaign issue. I think it's a little bit explosive, and I'm not sure where what the percentage would be in would be for the parties to really kind of engage in that. But sometimes issues just force themselves into the campaign debate.
Craig Gilbert, our guest. It's All Things Political this day before the Wisconsin primary and many other elections, local elections throughout the state. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. You can also post comments on the Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. I am Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program today, the 34th annual Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention is going to be taking place in Green Bay in about a week. We'll have two guests with us, Darby Nelson, author, scientist, teacher, former lawmaker from Minnesota, who's written a book that has been highly acclaimed, For the Love of Lakes, and we'll speak also with Eric Olson, director of the UW Extension Lakes Program based in Stevens Point. We are talking politics this hour. Carolyn Jefferson is next. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I'm just calling to let you know how irritated I am by the phone calls that Romney's making in my home all the time. I've had like 9 phone calls, and I want to know how come I'm on a no-call list and they don't have to honor that. They can keep calling me, and they're driving me nuts.
Yeah, are all the phone calls from Romney, not from Santorum?
I haven't had one from Santorum.
Oh, okay.
So you can tell who's got the money.
Well, actually, we were thinking about writing something about this today because you hear this a lot, and these things are always irritating to people. So you sort of wonder from a layperson's perspective, you know, why do the campaigns do it? Obviously, their research must tell them that it's effective. I mean, it's sort of symptomatic in some respects of kind of a campaign that's launched overnight without a lot of ground organization. And so this is sort of a substitute for that in some respects. But it's it's kind of dizzying, I think, for voters. I mean, everybody's getting zillions of these things. Nobody likes to get automated phone calls. I know that pollsters are exempt from the no-call list, and I'm sure campaigns are too, because I think it's for commercial vendors that that the no-call list applies. But it's interesting to hear the complaint, and you know, you never know whether you know what effect those robocalls have, and if they're self-defeating on some level. They can be very hard-hitting. I know the Romney robocalls contain a lot of negative information about Rick Santorum, a lot of audio of Rick Santorum saying different things. There's Romney robocalls with Rick Santorum praising Mitt Romney, and there's Romney robocalls with Rick Santorum attacking Mitt Romney. And so, you know, labor issues, spending issues, earmarks, you name it. So it's a part of the modern campaign.
And do you know, I think you should write on this. It'd be a lot of people are interested in it. Do you know where they get phone numbers? What list they're using?
Well, I think it's the same. You know, there are vendors out there. It's this, you know, people, pollsters use them too to get call lists. And they're available. I mean, they're out there. Hmm. I mean, they're publicly available. They're available for a price, I should say.
But something's new this year, because I rarely get these kinds of calls, and I've been flooded with them this year.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I'd like to get to in writing about this, is whether this has gone on in all the primary states, and to what degree it's new this year as opposed to past years. I mean, obviously, the technology has changed, just like we've seen a lot of automated polling, computer voice polling, otherwise known as robo-polls, which are much cheaper to do. We're also seeing, and the same technology permits, these telephone town hall meetings that politicians do, where they actually essentially do thousands of robocalls to let people know that they can dial into this teletown hall, and members of Congress do this to talk to their constituents. It's the same technology, so it's easier to do than it has been in the past.
Well, I'm glad you're on this story, Craig. Thank you. Carol, thanks for the call. Gregory in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I just want to ask all the Republicans to really look into your soul, because our nation is at a critical point right now. Our industry was moved out by the Stockholders' Bill of Rights, where it says that in order to make profit, that's the only thing that's important. It doesn't matter. And when you cut out restrictions on companies, they can pollute more freely, and your kids develop diseases. You develop diseases that you would never have before, because you're getting mercury or you're getting whatever in your system, because the regulations have been cut because the Republican Party's in there. They want money. They're greedy. That's the only thing they want. They moved our companies overseas, took your jobs, and they're employing Chinese. They said they would only take the low-level occupations, the people who didn't earn anything and didn't matter. But when you cut out any part of an economy, you cut the whole economy's foot out, because people spend money.
Thank you, Gregory, for your comments. Outsourcing, major issue this go-around, Craig?
Well, it's an issue. I mean, really, it's part of, you know, obviously the economy and jobs are massive issues in the campaign, and these are things that really do affect the way people vote. And so this is one piece of it. I mean, trade is one piece of it. Outsourcing is a piece of it. Taxes are a piece of it. So, you know, we'll be hearing more about this. You've got, you know, last time President Obama was here in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, he talked about insourcing, mm-hmm. and talked about the, you know, some positive numbers in terms of manufacturing and the idea of and used a Milwaukee company to talk about the idea of companies shifting jobs. In this case, it was Master Lock, shifting jobs back into the U.S. or growing their U.S. production as opposed to just their offshore production. So, yeah, those are big subjects.
Mm-hmm. And let's look at, I don't know how closely you pay attention, the latest polls for Obama show that he's, I don't know if you would say significantly, but he certainly is ahead in the state of Wisconsin. Is that something that's going to wildly fluctuate from month to month?
It won't wildly fluctuate, but it will fluctuate. I mean, we've, you know, a few months ago, you know, you could have made the case that he was in trouble here, you know, extremely vulnerable. He's still vulnerable here. I mean, I think because things change. But, you know, NBC Marist had a poll out a few days ago, which had him up by 17 points against Romney.
Oh, my gosh.
Head-to-head, 52-35. Now, that's probably the outer limit of, you know, where you might see him performing. And it reflected in part the fact that the Republican primary is still going on, so not all the Republican vote has consolidated behind Romney. When that happens, that number will close. But still, to be at 52% is a pretty good place for him to be. He's basically been ahead in all the Wisconsin polls in terms of the fall matchup. He obviously won big here last time by 14 points. But Republicans will go after this state because of what happened in 2010. And because of also how close it was in 2000 to 2004, and because electorally they need to make some inroads in the Midwest. And Wisconsin, you know, one way to think about the map from the Republican point of view is one hedge for them against losing some states that they've traditionally won, like North Carolina and Virginia, which they lost last time. One hedge against that is to try to play offense and flip some states that have been voting Democratic. And the three states that tend to fall into that category, states that have voted Democratic now for several presidential elections in a row, are Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And those are states that are always tempting targets for Republicans. Michigan is probably the toughest of those three for Republicans. So you're going to see Wisconsin and Pennsylvania targeted for that reason. And then what happened when that happened 4 years ago was that Michigan sort of fell off the table because of how well Obama was doing nationally, and eventually Wisconsin kind of fell off the table for McCain as well at the end, again, just because Obama turned out to be so strong in the Midwest and because the election wasn't that close in the end. So, but we're on a short list of states. I mean, if you look at the 12 states that Gallup polls on, which they've designated as battleground states, Wisconsin is one of them. And we've already seen, you know, when Obama did his first flight of advertising earlier this year, the television markets in Wisconsin were among the top targets.
Hmm. Well, it's certainly not the price of gasoline that are causing those poll numbers to go up for Obama. What is it?
Yeah, it's interesting because it did seem, again, you can't get too make too much of any individual poll. There was, you know, when gasoline was rising, there were some polls that suggested a tightening, and now I think the overall sort of positive trend in the economy is carrying him along. And if we keep getting you know, a couple hundred thousand jobs added every month, that's going to be a very good sign for him. And also, I think most people would say in the political class who observe this would say that the Republican primary fight has taken a toll on Mitt Romney individually and on the party, as well as some of the things that happened last year in terms of the debt showdown. So the Republican Party has taken some hits, but there are a lot of things that could happen that could bring this race back to sort of parity in an environment like this. And when you just think about what happened only 2 years ago, that's sobering for Democrats, and they can't take anything for granted.
I haven't had a chance to speak with you since the Supreme Court started deliberating health care reform, and I'm interested in knowing from you how, if indeed they strike down this bill, which the Obama administration has talked about as being a signature piece of legislation, and they're very proud of it. What does that do? People have to be thinking about that long and hard right now.
Yeah, it would be a pretty dramatic event.
Yes.
I mean, again, it's hard to know these things in advance. There's some people who think it would be a black mark on Obama because here their signature achievement has been found unconstitutional. On the other hand, we have a very divided Supreme Court. A lot of people are very cynical about the political divisions on the court, and if it is a 5-4 decision in which the five conservative justices all rule against the health care law, it could also have a mobilizing effect on Democrats. I mean, we've seen that in the past with Roe v. Wade, which for decades really activated social conservatives in the Republican Party and probably politically boosted Republican prospects in many elections. If you get that kind of outrage on one side against a big defining court decision, it can have a mobilizing effect. So it's very unpredictable.
Let's go to Bill in Prescott. Hi, Bill.
Good morning. Mr. Gilbert, could you help me with one thing here on these governor recalls? According to my somewhat improbable information, I guess, there's only been one other governor that's been recalled in around about 1921. I don't have any particulars on that. And would you care to comment also in the regards to the Wisconsin Supreme Court on the dues issues? I was curious as to whether the safety people, the fire and the police, if they had not been treated disparately as far as refusing to collect dues from the employer on a monthly basis, if that would have had any difference in their findings overall.
On your first question, there have been two recall elections involving governors in which both cases governors were removed from office. The one you mentioned happened in North Dakota. I think it was 1921. But the other one, you'll remember when I mention it, was the election that sent Arnold Schwarzenegger to the governor's office in California. It was the recall of Gray Davis, and so about a decade ago. And that's a much more modern case. It was different from the Wisconsin case in a lot of interesting ways. They have a different ballot. There's an up or down vote on the governor. We just have a regular election ballot for our recall. It's a rarity. And so I don't know if you can draw much from the one that happened in 1921, but it doesn't happen very often, and that's why it's going to be such a big national story. In terms of the court decision, I believe it was a federal court that ruled on this, not the state Supreme Court, in terms of knocking down some aspects of Act 10, which went to this issue of treating different unions differently, because you had the police and firefighter unions not only weren't affected by the collective bargaining provisions, but they also weren't affected by the changes to how dues were being collected and the certification process. And that was where the court ruled that there was no rationale for having one set of unions where basically dues were mandatory, and then have them collected automatically, and then having a different set of rules for all these other unions which were not mandatory. And that case, is the case that's kind of live before us, where we had the recent decision.
Let's spend just a moment on what the issues are that will drive the turnout for the recall election. Is it still primarily collective bargaining, Craig, or is it much more than that?
Well, that's obviously what started it all, and what kind of that's the framework for everything in terms of it's ignited the fire, the wildfire in the state. But I think it's clearly going to be broader than that. I mean, it's hard to tease it out from a whole bunch of other issues. Obviously, it's all about what you think of the governor, and it's all about whether you think whether you blame him or blame his opponents for the turbulence and turmoil and the division, whether you think the recall is an appropriate tool in this case. I think the perceptions about the economy will have an impact. This grand jury investigation could potentially have an impact. There's a lot of things going on that could affect all this. And most people think that there aren't a lot of undecided voters when it comes to the governor, which makes this in part a furious battle on both sides to mobilize their partisan bases and try to achieve an advantage by turning out more of their people than the other side turns out of their people.
Thanks, Bill, for the call. Another Bill from Madison. Hi, Bill.
Hi. This refers to, I think, the first caller. I intend to vote for Rick Santorum, even though I plan to vote for Barack Obama in the fall. And I don't think this should be legal, by the way. I think that only Republicans should be able to choose a Republican candidate. I think that this open primaries are a bad thing for democracy.
Why are you doing it then? Why are you voting that way?
Can I finish?
Of course. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think that it's time. I really, the difference is I don't want to do it for the reason of continuing this so-called clown show. I really want Santorum to be nominated, because I think that it would force the American public to actually decide once and for all just what kind of country it wants to be. There's just absolutely no doubt that there would be a huge difference between the way Rick Santorum as president would govern and the way Barack Obama governs.
All right, let's get a response. Craig.
Well, the only way to really make it illegal, I mean, the fact that we don't have registration by party in Wisconsin is really the reason we have open primaries, because you can't, you know, there's nothing in your registration that says I belong to the Democratic Party or the Republican primary. So there's really no basis for excluding anybody from voting in a given primary, as long as they don't vote in two party primaries on the same day. So that would have to change, and that's been a long tradition in Wisconsin, and not just in Wisconsin. You know, Michigan also has an open primary. You know, this is an old debate. There was a move years ago, I think on the Democratic side, to try to make the Democratic primary in Wisconsin a beauty contest that had no delegate impact because it was an open primary, and that option would be available available to the parties if they want to just leave the open primary intact but just make it not mean anything by having the delegates selected through caucuses separately. They could do that. There are people that have a problem with open primaries. They think the partisans should choose it, but it has an impact. I mean, in 4 years ago, when John McCain, who was ultimately the Republican nominee, in the first six contests, I don't think he ever won Republican voters outright in any of those contests. But his appeal among independents was critical for him in getting through those early contests and emerging as the front runner. It's been a little murkier, the patterns in this race, but it does, in the poll that came out overnight, Mitt Romney has a bigger lead among Republican voters than he does among all likely primary voters, because Santorum is doing better with independents. So it can have an impact, certainly, in a close race.
Thanks, Bill, for the call. What's the legal timeline now for voter ID?
Well, that's kind of up to the courts, I believe. We don't have it. We were going to have it in this primary, and now we're not. And so I think, you know, this is one of many issues in Wisconsin that's being litigated.
So the chances are good that we will have some kind of answer by the recall elections or not?
I honestly don't know.
Hmm. There's so many things going on. Just so much. Craig Gilbert is our guest, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. You can send an email if you would like to do that. That's talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John in Milwaukee is our next caller. Hi, John.
Hi. I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but I think if your guest would do an in-depth report on robocalls, I think he'd find there's a lot more to it than just frequency in various regions of the United States. I'm curious as to how much they really cost. And if you hang up, as soon as you recognize it as a robocall, or does it cost more if you just put the receiver on the arm couch and let it
right.
ring out? And then I've all, let it just sit, and it's my phone does not disconnect. Does that follow up the robocall machine, or... I'm curious as to the actual technical aspect of it. Do they look at, well, we made contact, even though I pick up and drop? Or is there some kind of monitoring that they're trying to do with this? I really don't know. I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah, and I don't know the answer to those questions. I mean, I know it's cheaper than it used to be, I don't know if I can tell you how to mess with the robocalls most effective manner. Those are interesting questions. But I don't know. I'm not familiar enough with the details of robocalling to answer them.
But that would be an interesting part of the article. How do people handle them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks, John, very much for the call. How many states are winner-take-all? How many are proportional?
I don't know exactly, but there were different rules for different phases of this race. We're sort of there was an earlier phase of the race where states could not be winner-take-all, and now we're just beginning the phase where they're allowed to be winner-take-all. Wisconsin is not winner-take-all and traditionally hasn't been. We divide our delegates by there are some at-large delegates, and then a lot of them are divvied up by congressional districts. So if you win a congressional district, you get, you know, those three or four delegates that go with that congressional district. There's been a lot written about the change in the rules this time around on the Republican side, having the effect of extending the race because it reduced the number of winner-take-all primaries. The effect really hasn't been that dramatic. I mean, I think the main thing that's extended the race has been just the dynamic of the contest and the fact that, you know, Mitt Romney as a front runner has had trouble really consolidating Republican support, and you've had, you know, all these different people emerge as alternatives to Romney and rise and then fall. That's really why the race has been extended more than the rules.
Stan in Madison, hi.
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just heard in the last hour that the St. Norbert poll shows that that Santorum, that 22% of the vote for Santorum is going to be appears to be Democrats who are trying to elect to get him to be nominated instead of Romney against Obama. Now, if I understand it correctly also, that the vote is very close between Santorum and Romney, then I think since this is an open primary, I think it would be very good if Democrats do go out tomorrow and vote for Santorum.
We got a campaign going on here.
I guess we do.
I don't know about that 22% figure. I'd be very skeptical of that. For one thing, you know, when you have a poll that only samples 400 or 500 people, and you start getting down into the percentage of Democrats in a Republican primary survey, those are pretty small numbers, and they have a big margin of error. The polls that I'm looking at, the one that just came out today, Santorum does do better among Democrats, but the numbers of Democrats who say they're going to vote in the primary are so small that you can't really rely on those numbers. But I do think it's a fair question to wonder, you know, on the margins, how much of an effect some of this could have. Again, if it's an 8-point race, it's probably not very decisive. But in Michigan, it could have had an effect because it was a 2 or 3-point race, and clearly Santorum got some sort of a bump from Democratic voters on the margins in that race.
Thank you, Stan. Hugh in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hi. Does the for the month for the Democratic primary? Does the winner have to have a majority of the vote or a simple plurality? Prosser, remember, when running for a state judge, had actually a majority of the vote in the first primary and yet was required to run against Kloppenberg in a second primary. It seems like the election laws of Wisconsin are absurd. Second, I will vote. I went to see Gingrich, who had a history lecture in Milwaukee, but not really a rousing political rally. I plan to vote for Paul, but I will vote for any Republican over the anti-white administration of Obama. It is a pro-crime administration. It doesn't say a word when the new Black Panther Party calls basically for the murder of Zimmerman. We had an incident in the burbs here where some teenagers who were drinking and shouldn't have been and having a loud party, and then the police come and they flee the police, and one of them breaks into somebody's home and is shot and killed, and of course the liberals are all upset. If you're not breaking the law and if you're not trying to break in somebody's home or thinking of burglarizing as in Florida, why is the Democratic Party always a pro-crime party? If you want to end crime, you crack down on it, and you do the best you can to crack down. And you even have individuals who are beyond the police, because police can't be everywhere, to crack down. So I have a lot of points. And your liberal callers, your typical liberal callers, of course, take the other side. But I will vote for anybody but Obama. I'm not for Santorum. I don't like his Opus Dei background and a lot of his other things. I'll be voting for Ron Paul in the primary, but I'm sure I'll be voting for any Republican over Obama and his hate whitey, new Black Panther Party, illegal voters, illegal alien voters. Program.
Hugh, don't you feel for this kid who, he wasn't burglarizing, he was walking down the street, he wasn't engaged in any criminal act?
We don't know that. We have two very different sides of the story, and we have the new Black Panther Party calling for his death, $10,000 or $1 million, whether the amount varies, dead or alive. And this president says nothing about it except to stir up race hatred. So the Democratic Party proves itself as the anti-white party.
All right. Thank you, Hugh. Craig?
Well, I'll answer the first question, which was about primaries.
Okay.
And there's a simple explanation. The Prosser race was a nonpartisan primary. It was not a partisan primary. It was a spring primary. So that's why you had this sort of runoff system that we've always had, whereas in partisan primaries, you've got a Democratic primary and a Republican primary, and the person with the most votes, whether it's majority or plurality, becomes the nominee. So there's nothing kind of strange about that system.
You want to take on the rest of those comments, Greg?
No.
All right. Peter in Stoughton. Hi.
Good morning. I think the Democrats have to, in Wisconsin, have to remember that there is more to the upcoming elections than just the union business. Kathleen Falk signed some sort of promise with some union group very early on in her campaign, stating that she was going to be pro-union and promising to be such, just like Tommy Thompson signing Grover Norquist's anti-tax thing. You start making promises like that early on and you get caught up. And I'm sure the million-plus people who signed the recall petitions, yes, the aspect of the unions has something to do with it, but there were a lot of other issues that have really teed people off about Walker. And, my wife's a state employee. She's not union. But there are lots of other issues here that they need to pay attention to.
Craig.
Well, I think we saw in the legislative recalls last summer that there wasn't a lot of advertising in those battles about Act 10 and about collective bargaining. It was really much broader than that. It was more broadly about the budgets. It was about traditional issues that separate Republicans and Democrats. And so, yeah, we could see that again. In this campaign, there'll be broader arguments being made about the governor's record and whether and how the state is doing under the governor. And so, absolutely, it's one thing to say that the union fight, the collective bargaining fight, touched this off. And if it hadn't been for that, we wouldn't be looking at a recall election. But that doesn't mean that the recall election is going to be purely or even overwhelmingly about collective bargaining or public employee unions.
Thank you, Peter. Greg in Burnett County. Hi, Greg.
Hi. I think about Santorum and I think about Romney running for president. They're so different from Barack Obama. He's trying everything to build up the economy, everything, but the Republicans won't let him do anything through Congress. They won't let him raise any taxes at all. To make any money, to make society work again. But Romney, he made his money. He has a company that buys up other companies and shuts them down, streamlines them, cuts out American jobs. And Santorum is religion. Our government was formed without any religion. We have freedom of religion. We don't have to believe religiously if we don't want to, and we're equal to everyone else. I'm not going to believe religiously. I refuse to believe religiously. And I'm not going to have a religious president, some guy who judges things on non-reality.
All right. Thank you, Greg, very much for your comments. Steve in Oxford, our final call. We're running out of time. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I'll try and be quick. My comments on the recall and some of the reasons that I see. Number one is the arrogance of the Republicans in ignoring the largest and long, most sustained protest in the history of the state, I think had a lot to do with this recall. And me personally, I'm adamantly opposed to voter ID.
All right. Thank you, Steve. You were very succinct. What are you up to today, Craig?
Well, we've got Mitt Romney back in town for a town hall meeting this afternoon. Rick Santorum's a little further away. He's kind of shuttling between Shawano and the north and making his way down to Ripon. And then, you know, we've got late polling, robocalls, new television ads. You know, we're kind of in that kind of hectic end game of the primary right now, and it'll be exciting today and tomorrow.
Where is Romney today? In Milwaukee?
He ends up he's got an event, a town hall this afternoon in Milwaukee.
Okay. Well, thank you, Craig. We'll be chatting again many times in this very exciting year.
I enjoyed it.
Thank you, Craig. So did I. Craig Gilbert, thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. Craig is Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the program. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and then we'll talk about our lakes. Stay with us.